Here we go again, folks. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Not the vibe that we were hoping to come on with this morning. No fun Friday here. Failure Friday.
Just kidding. It is Failure Friday. Although the game happened on a Thursday night. A bleak, woeful Thursday night.
We were just saying, like, are we coming on here, like, red hot? And my take was, I feel like when your mom says that she's disappointed in you after like a report card, and it's like the worst thing to hear is like, I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. Like, you could have done better.
They definitely could have done better. It was yelling and screaming after game one.
Oh my God. It was literally burned the city down after game one.
And this is the only loss since. It doesn't feel as, again, the anger is not there. But the disappointment is tenfold.
It was the perfect storyline going into last night. Like, just simply win a game. If it were me, I would have scored on the breakaway and won a game. I would have easily just been like, why don't we win tonight? Perfect scenario to end
you know
the streak.
Done? I would have just won the game.
I would have just won. It's not that hard. Don't lose. Perfect opportunity. Home ice. Win four in a row. Prove that you don't mess with the winning lineup. Do it in front of your fans that are hungry for something. And yet we have another version of a game that we feel like we see in these big moments time and time and time again. What is this? 11 straight losses with a chance to clinch a series. That's a lot.
Since 2013, in the Matthews-Marner era, 10 consecutive losses.
That's a long, long span.
That's 10 times you felt this way, where it's build up, right? It's people getting excited. And I don't know if I left the arena at the perfect time. I didn't get a head start. We'll get into that in a second. But I blew out through the doors just as the most angry people were blowing out through the doors.
Oh, boy.
And people are mad. Like, deservedly so, people should be mad. But there was an expectation, again, for the 10th time, double-digit time, since 2018 with these guys, that this would finally be the night where you could exhale, where you could finally celebrate a series victory, where you could finally
ready,
feel
Justin.
Validated in your Leafs fandom. The streets were ready.
People had unopened bottles of champagne. Maybe we jinxed it, but there was a stretch of establishments ready to pop off last night. And then yet they just have to say, okay, see you Saturday.
Yeah. And maybe it's better. Maybe this is a spin.
Oh, wow. Spin zone.
But, okay. You know there's going to be a celebration. You know there's going to be partying in the streets when they finally win a first round. We saw a lot of highlights from 04 yesterday circulating
on
Twitter.
Which is hilarious.
People getting really fired up. Certainly times have changed because people look different, people dress different, people act different. But if it happens on the road, maybe you avoid like all the jokes when you're celebrating like you won a Stanley Cup after winning a first round series.
I was a little worried about that. That's my spin zone. But I think you're onto something because I was a little bit worried about that too. We talked about it after the show. We were just debriefing yesterday. I was like, if they win, it's going to be absolute carnage out there. And I'm like, the Leafs Nation's going to be the butt of the joke where people are like quote tweeting, would you guys win a Stanley Cup when people are like jumping off cop cars? And it's like, let them be themselves.
And
if
to
this
be
is
fair,
the case.
Leaf fans wouldn't care about people trying to dunk on them because the elation would be off the charts.
100%, and deservingly so. Do whatever the hell you want responsibly.
And I was worried, like, because am I getting home tonight if they win? Like, that was a consideration.
I was ready to go.
Is it smarter for me to stay home was something I actually thought about. Because not only may I not go be able to get, like, on the highway and get home, my car might get flipped over because it'll be pure.
And deservingly so. And I hope that Maple Leafs fans get that opportunity Saturday night. But, yeah, you know that if that is the case, it's going to be, like, every person that's ever had success in any other city is going to like quote tweet that and be like
100%.
Well, I thought that was round one win, not Stanley Cup.
100%. Anyway, but so again, it wouldn't matter.
That's long ways.
But I will say it is better if you can spill out onto the streets and enjoy a series victory.
Pretty cool.
But you can reserve that for a later date and just win a series. You can win a series on Saturday night and actually celebrate appropriately with not having to worry about maybe work the next day.
And selfishly, we won't get to come on.
A Saturday night celebration is okay.
Selfishly, we won't get to come on in the morning and get to celebrate with the listeners. We have to wait till Monday if that's the case, or Tuesday if that's the case. So
think about, I mean, you're the ultimate vibes radio personality.
Wow, that's a compliment.
There you go.
The ultimate radio vibes.
See, we're in a decent mood.
Feeling way better.
Would you rather come on a Monday morning talking about them winning a series over the weekend and maybe enjoying a Saturday night, or Nervous Nelly freak out central Monday morning teeing up a game seven?
If this goes to game seven, all bets are off, Justin. I don't think I can come in.
So we can save the radio show morning after and the celebration for a later date if they just get it done on Saturday.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, but it was the perfect script going into last night. And the Maple Leafs just didn't play with the same level of, I don't know, urgency that I think a fan base felt. Like, the passion that everybody wanted to see out on the ice and the excitement and the energy wasn't just harnessed. Like, it was just, to me, lackluster might be a bit of a strong word, but it was not the performance that you want to see in a series clinching game. And I think it came back to something that we talked about over the last day or two, since there was a period of time between each game. So it's like, it's a game seven, like play this one like it's game seven, a must win. And I think actually when I look back, I'm like, maybe don't play like every game seven you've been in, because every game seven you've been in over the last, what, seven series rounds, You've played scared to lose and not playing to win. And I think that sometimes the Maple Leafs take that game seven approach not with the air of confidence and the air of we've been there before. It's like, we need to win this game and we're going to tighten up and we're going to not play our best loose performance. And maybe they can do that tomorrow on the road with an opportunity once again to clinch, but with the backup in the, you know, in their mind that this isn't it. But to me last night, it was not playing to win. It was playing not to lose at times. And sure, there was actually flashes where the Maple Leafs were the better team. But once again, it's just like Tampa has been the better team in majority of these games and these majority of these periods. And it's getting to the point where it's like, how are you stealing a series if you win this one?
So the million-dollar question is why, right? Like, why can't they perform in this spot? Why are they 0-10 in the Matthews-Marner era when they have a chance to put away an opponent? If someone knew the answer, anyone,
it'd be fixed.
They would be working for the Maple Leafs. They would be highly paid, and there wouldn't be an issue because it would be resolved. So we don't know why. Mm-hmm. We have no idea why. But again, we're forced to ask ourselves that question. I've been asking myself that question those 10 times since 2018. I think to answer it from last night, though, you got to look past the Maple Leafs and maybe towards the Lightning.
No, they deserve some credit for sure.
100%. Because they know how to play the back against the wall game. They know how to play the back against the wall game. That's what they've done a million times before. It is routine for them to have a performance like that. But I think there are, like, it is a contrast between how these two teams acted in this game. The Lightning, when backs are against the wall, when they have to have something, when there is a big time pressure moment, there is a swelling team aspect. They play together. They play as one collective unit. They seem to trust each other and trust that what they will do, if done together, will be positive. And what I saw from the Leafs and the stark contrast is, okay, this is a big spot. I understand this in my head individually. I, Austin Matthews, I, Mitch Marner, I, whatever, need to make something happen. What I saw is one team, like, really trusting each other, and then the Leafs maybe only trusting themselves. And that's not like they have distrust in their team, but the anxiousness to be the solution, to have the moment, to be having a positive effect on the game. I feel like individuality sort of shone through with their performance, while continuity shone through for the Lightning. And when those two things are compared against each other, I mean, you're always going to take continuity over individuality, are you not?
Well, the reason the Tampa Bay Lightning can do that is because they've won Stanley Cups in 3 years, and they've been to the finals, and they trust themselves as a team, and they have leadership, and they have a coach that believes in them, and they have a unity in that locker room that when things get tough, they can find a way through it. The Maple Leafs haven't had that opportunity. they've gone through some really great regular seasons. But when the playoffs come around, it's a completely different vibe. And
Austin Matthews has never been able to go to the bench and think, I know the next line is going to have it. And the next time I go out there, I'm going to be in an even better spot. The Lightning have that.
And if the Maple Leafs are able to do that once, I think it unlocks this like level of trust and team dynamic, which you just brought up, that they have never been able to lean on. Mm-hmm. And they had just some major back against the wall comeback wins in the last three games. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's a small sample size where they can look around that locker room and say, we can do this, but it's different. It's closing out a series, and you haven't done that in forever. And that's got to loom. It's got to be in the back of your mind. I don't care how strong your sports psychologists are. It is a fact that everybody in the sports world knows. We were listening to CBS this morning before we get on the air.
A-Law Radio.
A-Law Radio is talking about the Maple Leafs and their curses. And it's not just a Toronto thing. It is known. And it's freaky because I don't know how that doesn't start to creep in, even if it's a fake, intangible thing with like the ghosts of whatever. But it's still something that you need to overcome. And they haven't been able to do it. And Tampa Bay has the upper edge with the championship pedigree that if they go back home to Tampa, and they are now, they've got to be feeling like, hey, we're one win away from it being a complete coin toss in a game where they have completely dominated in game sevens.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it earlier. The Leafs didn't play bad. Mm-hmm. It wasn't game one. We were completely up in arms about effort and the moment being too big.
Embarrassing.
Like, it was kind of a 50-50 game. Andrei Vasilevsky was great. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs had their chances, didn't bury them. But I feel like all the really strong moments were individual moments. It wasn't like, hey, this is three or four shifts in a row where the Maple Leafs really brought it to Tampa Bay. It was like, wow, that was a good Nylander shift. And then 5 minutes later, wow, Matthews had a chance there.
Oh, Matthews gets that goal. It was Matthews turned it on in the end. It was Morgan Rielly had that moment. You're right. That was a dynamite first line, second line shift. It was individual efforts, and that's not enough to win you.
It was never Tampa is on its heels for a prolonged period of time. And then conversely, the Maple Leafs were held to 37 shot attempts at even strength. So
those are just attempts, right? Not even actual shots on net.
That's attempts, yeah. So how did Tampa approach that game? Tampa approached that game like, okay, we need as few scoring chances as possible. We need this to be as high variance as possible. We need there to be like eight opportunities to score the entire game, and hopefully our goaltender's better than theirs. And that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And I said routine on that performance. Yes, because they've done that so many times before. Like, as much as we've seen the 0 for 10 for the Maple Leafs since 2018, we've seen the Lightning time and time again, when they need a win, they just shrink and are collectively tight, and they find a way to win in those moments. They play a little bit different, and they have a proven concept when the game is as important as it is. And that's exactly what they did. It's going to be a low event game. We're going to trust that we're going to take the opportunities, that we're going to have the nerve, and our goaltender is going to be better. I said 37 shots at even strength, shot attempts rather, for the Maple Leafs. The lowest regular season average for 32 teams across the NHL this year was 38. So this was a diminished output from one of the best offensive teams in the league. The Lightning did that to them. It wasn't that the Leafs were very selective with their shots. That wasn't what it was. It was the Lightning doing what they do in the playoffs, which is putting a squeeze on an opponent. And they had the opportunity to win that game despite the squeeze. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of chances. Not a lot of chances. They had some chances.
They had enough chances to win that game.
But Tampa, that was their roll of the dice. That was their game plan to be like, hey, we don't want track meet. We don't want fire versus fire. We want Vasilevsky to make one more save than Samsonov. And that's exactly what happened.
So since we're talking about individual efforts, I think it's completely justified to call some out, and it needs to happen. Let's start with Vasilevsky, because that was the Vasilevsky that we didn't see for the first four games of the series, and it is scary to think that that guy could be gaining confidence now. He gets a big road win. First of all, road teams are just absolutely electric in this NHL playoff round one. Nonetheless, Vasilevskiy came in, and he didn't need those x-ray glasses that he called out for his team. He played.
Or he got a quick LASIK.
Yeah, a quick LASIK on the trip over. He played. There were flashes of scary Vasilevskiy. Vasilevskiy.
Looked like the Andre Vasilevskiy who's heard everyone talk about how he might be poor in one area, and he might be a diminishing asset, and he might be completely on the decline, and he'd never be that Stanley Cup champion.
He listened.
All the chatter. He spoke before this game, and he went out there and was vintage Andre Vasilevskiy.
And that's a guy that's going to ride on a little confidence. Now he's back home. He beat Samsonov. Mm-hmm. This series so far, Samsonov was the better goaltender. And goaltenders, they got to look down the ice, and it's like, it's a competition, me versus you. I want to be the better goaltender. So Samsonov was that for most of the series. Yeah, they both had garbage first games. But when you like even it out, Samsonov had bigger moments, bigger saves. We came on here, we praised Samsonov for outplaying Andre Vasilevskiy. Vasilevskiy got a win in the column for both his performance over Samsonov and the team. And you don't want to give that guy an inch, because he can be the reason the Tampa Bay Lightning steal another one. And then you're in a game seven. And who performs really well under pressure in a game seven? Andre Vasilevskiy. So that's scary. That's something that we certainly need to address, bring up, because different game if it's Vasilevskiy of 2 days ago, right? So
yeah, I don't
they couldn't
think,
find a way.
I don't think the expectation should have been any different. Right. And we know like the numbers after a loss, and we know the numbers after a loss recently haven't been so good. But we also haven't seen him just completely disappear.
Yeah, but look at history.
We've seen cracks in it, but we've never seen him actually shake hands with an opponent after a series, after turning in a poor performance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lost in the Stanley Cup final, but they were overwhelmed by a better team. A team that might be one in a million, too, by the way, because look what's happening to them now. That was right spot, right time for Colorado. And if you're not that, it's really, really difficult to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, as they continue to prove, and Andre Vasilevskiy.
So Vasilevskiy is certainly the main reason that Tampa Bay was able to pull that out at times. There was a lot of great saves in timely moments. Maple Leafs also didn't do too much to, like, put him in the position he was in the last couple of games. I felt like they weren't able to really, like, cause as much of muck in the crease. They weren't able to find the way to capitalize. Obviously, there's a lot of missed opportunities. They did get opportunities, though, so if you're looking for something, like, it wasn't like they didn't get any chances, but he did stand on his head at times, and that's not enough for the Maple Leafs to try to get what a Mitch Marner breakaway that you made Andre Vasilevskiy move 0 inches.
I want to ask you about that.
Well, right away, I looked over to you. I'm like, what? Like, why would you just shoot it at his blocker?
Do you have a theory?
No.
Because Mitch Marner's a talented guy, and we know that, right? Mitch Marner has some really good shoot or penalty shot. Breakaway, third try is a charm.
Are you trying to say that maybe the moment is too big for superstars in closeout games?
No. Well, we could flirt with that idea.
Well,
for sure.
it's one play in a 60-minute game, but I mean, you don't get many opportunities like that.
Did it just sort of sum up the moment that it was, let's get this puck off my stick?
Probably.
On the breakaway.
I mean, these guys,
knowing me, and I'm not, obviously, not even within the context of the leagues in which I play in or have played in, have any sort of talent that would even compare.
Well, just think about
when I'm not feeling like, I just want to get a shot off, right?
Yeah.
I felt that. Have you felt that?
100%. I just think if we look at the history, 10 consecutive games where you're in the driver's seat that you lose, when have we ever said the core four were the reasons why they won a game? Well, they haven't won a game, but when was it ever like, that was a dominant blank person performance, right? They kind of shy away, and that's kind of been the issue with Mitch Marner. He shied away from the moment, and yeah, he did score in a breakaway. That's not why they didn't win the game. I just meant like there were tiny moments like that throughout the game where like, I don't want to bring this up again, but would Leon Draisaitl not have found a way? Would, a massive playoff contributor who has that that title on them, that they are a big moment guy, scored that goal or put that puck in the net or bounced on that rebound or made that defensive play. Like, there was moments where you thought, ah, we just need somebody to grab this game and be the best player on the ice. And that never happened with the Maple Leafs.
It wasn't that, like, the surgical finish eluded them all night. And they had opportunities. Mitch Marner, clear-cut breakaway, cherry-picking, whatever
Austin
you want to call it.
Austin Matthews missed the net a couple times.
William Nylander, who is not
he
really
had some flashes, but that's it.
Opposed to missing the net. Like, I feel like there were chances, and then maybe there were squandered chances for whatever reason.
Anyway, I'm nitpicking
uncharacteristically,
one thing, and that's fine. But
to discuss a breakaway with Marner, though, without yet mentioning Justin Hall, though,
I'm trying to anxiously get to Justin Hall because I don't want to make this a Mitch Marner conversation about missing a breakaway, which is a small point. Mm-hmm. Justin Hall needs to be out of the lineup. He is certainly untenable to use Justin Cuthbert. Too bad, too many Justins in this sentence. You got to change your name, buddy.
That was also brought up last night.
You don't want to share it with Justin Hall.
You were so mad at Justin Hall. You're like, you got to change your name. You don't want to be associated with this person.
It's bad. It is really, really bad. And if you run this out again, are you too stubborn to admit defeat that a guy that you love and you have given many opportunities is certainly not cutting it? You have the stats here, and they're pretty gross. And its eye test is also matching the numbers, folks. And I know a lot of people are very frustrated with Justin Hall, and deservingly so. And they have an opportunity now to switch their lineup. Do they make the difficult decision again? Because you have Timothy Liljegren in the press box, who has proven at times, we've talked about this season, that he was the MVP of the D-Core. There was a stretch, which sounds crazy now because we haven't seen the guy in a while, but he had played to an elevated level that helped this D-Core. I don't know what month it was, December, November, whatever. He hasn't obviously lived up to that, but are you going to take out the guy that has been detrimental to your back end, one of two at least, and put in a guy that's been sitting in the press box for now, 5 games. It's a really tough decision, but I think it needs to happen.
So Hall was major, major, major culpability on 2 of the 3 goals not scored and into an empty net, one of which he tried to hit Brandon Hagel, just kind of a little overzealous, and then was late getting back when Hagel just bounced right off him on the first goal. Clearing the front of the net, body position, it's as easy as pulling yourself out of position and not being able to get back there. 1-0 Lightning. Or 1-1.
After the Maple Leafs get on the board first.
Immediately after.
Have the momentum. And what did we talk about all day yesterday? I said, score the first goal, get the crowd into it. Before the crowd had even sat down and stopped waving their towels, the puck was already in the net. You can't, like, that is the response. The Lightning took the response, said, we're winning this game. Like, that is the grasp it and said, we don't care about Morgan Riley getting on the board first. Let's shut down your fan base. Let's shut down your momentum. And that was it.
They were undeterred by that moment.
Yeah.
And misplaced aggression is kind of the reason for Justin Hall. Pulls himself out of position. It goes in, but they had a response.
So that's goal one.
That's goal one. The second one, though, is worse because it's kind of unexplainable. Like, even anyone could look at that and be like, why did Justin Hall turn the wrong way?
Yeah, like, we like watched the replay, so why did he pivot towards the center of the ice?
Like, anyone could see how that's just not the most efficient play. I don't even have an explanation for why he would have done that.
You learned that in Adam.
And when you see that, honestly, is when you're playing in a beer league and there are guys who can't even turn both ways, right? Like, that's just how it is. There are guys that are not comfortable turning both ways.
I used the Zoolander joke to you. Unfortunately, you haven't seen Zoolander, where he can only turn left.
Yeah. Is that Justin Hall last night? Clearly he can, but like, I don't even know how your body as an NHL play 82, like tons of, what are you going to play? 80 plus. Justin Hall's been around the whole year. This is what you do on a day-to-day basis. Everything should be instinctual, and yet you turn the wrong way on a one-on-one, and that turn was provided the space that Essiemont, and I hate that he did that because now I got to say Essiemont on the radio.
And, sorry, no, go finish your point.
It gives him the space to beat Samsonov, provide Samsonov with his worst moment of the game. If he had turned the other way, he closed the gap, and it's a nothing burger.
How about Essiemont coming in for Tanner Jeannot, who they paid their future draft lottery of 78 picks to get? John Cooper makes a tough decision, puts Essiemont in.
Well, Sheldon Keefe made a tough decision too, and it backfired. So.
That's what I'm saying. But coaching battle chalk one up for John Cooper.
Yeah.
It ages great.
Sure,
it ages great. I thought, wow, you're going to take Tanner Janot out of the lineup? And then you're like, good decision. John Cooper's so smart.
It's a major hindsight game.
Of course.
It's like, oh, he's brilliant for that move. I mean, if they lost, it'd be like, what are
but
you
still,
doing?
But still, hey,
like,
sometimes you got to know which buttons to push. And maybe that was a swing for the fences in a game that you must win. But nonetheless, the guy made the right choice. We haven't got to bunting yet. Was that the right decision to not change your lineup? Nonetheless, Justin Hall.
Let's finish Hall here. So
what are the stats?
That's the second one. He's on for a third one. He's on for all goals. He's on the ice for 14 of the 19. I guess it might be 20 now because they scored an empty net.
It doesn't count.
We can talk about how I left a little later.
Yeah.
Whatever. 70%, around there, a little over 70% of the goals the Lightning have scored, Justin Hall's been on the ice for five or six of which have been on the penalty kill, and that's part of it. So it's right to ask the question, right? Like, if he's always part of the problem, mm-hmm. when there are decisive moments in the game, there are only so many big moments in a hockey game because goals mean so much. Like, yeah, Jake McCabe landed a couple hits. Does it really matter that Jake McCabe landed a couple hits in the game? No. What matters the most is that Nick Paul scored another big goal. And Issimont had a moment for himself as well. So those are the things that matter. And the moments that have mattered in a bad way for the Maple Leafs, Justin Hall's been around for. So you got to ask the question, should he be on the ice again in game six?
Somebody did ask the question post game mm-hmm. to Sheldon Keefe. We have that audio clip. He was asked about the decision to continue to put Justin Hall in the lineup. This was his response.
Justin Hall's been on the ice for approximately 73% of the Lightning's goals this series. You know, what's behind the decision to keep going back to him, especially with a guy like Timothy Liljegren watching in the press box?
Well, I guess my first response would be whether he's been on the ice by himself in those situations. But I think the answer is no. He's not out there by himself in those situations when he's getting scored on. You know, I think we need those guys to be better. You know, we need those guys to be better. They were involved in the goals here tonight. So I guess that's really all I would say. But at the same time, they've also done a good job for us at different times in the series.
Credit to Mike Stevens for the question. It is ballsy to throw stats at a coach post-game.
As soon as I start playing that quote before the show, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
73%. Like, Sheldon Keefe's probably like, oh yeah, you're going to bring numbers out, kiddo.
Yeah, that was, credit. I mean, it takes some cojones to do that. Okay, so Sheldon Keefe knows. He didn't need the number, he knows the number. And already we saw Justin Hall's minutes diminish. He didn't play much last night, which is crazy because it seemed like he was on the ice all the time. There was a moment in the second period, I think, where he was just like playing forward.
We looked at each other.
It was like a whole shift. It was like
Justin Hall spent, I would say, 48 seconds below the hash marks in the offensive zone.
Yeah.
I said, did I miss a lineup change where Justin Hall was put on forward? Because it certainly seemed that way.
Did someone get hurt?
And then he's got to skate his ass back the ice, and it's just, you're exhausted. Why are you playing forward? It's like he was just like, I got to do something. I have to do something positive. Give me any opportunity to do one thing positive. It's just, he's playing out of character because it's just got to a point where
he's trying to get something
there
back.
There needs to be a change.
I just don't know what he can do. Like, I understand it's Timothy Liljegren.
He can go sit in the press box.
He was already, so Justin Hall's minutes already curtailed. Morgan Rielly played 26, and he's been an absolute rock star. So he deserved the 26 minutes.
Yeah.
But Justin Hall's minutes went down to 12. Actually didn't kill as much on the, he wasn't out there for the penalty kill as much as he normally would be. Like, trust is waning for sure with Sheldon Keefe. But I don't know if there's a good answer because it's not just Justin Hall. It's Mark Giordano too.
So the two of them.
It's a bad pairing.
It's
a pairing that cannot play in this series at a high level. Like, they just can't.
But do they have another option?
Mark Giordano got stapled from behind. Mm-hmm. It looked like there was a little bit of a head injury thing. Is he came back in the game? Is he going to be good to go? Should he play? Because he frankly looks old. These two guys are struggling out there. And to suggest that Timothy Liljegren could replace one of them and be miles ahead, I don't know. Well, you look at the numbers in the regular season, they're good, but they're good for everyone. You can't even look at numbers for the Maple Leafs in the regular season and draw any meaningful conclusions, especially when it comes to the defense corps, because it's just like an idyllic state in the 82 regular season games. Like, they're not pushed around. It's not Tampa Bay. It's Tampa Bay a couple times, but it's not even real Tampa Bay. It's not playoff Tampa Bay. They're not challenged the same way they are. So you could look at the stats and be like, oh, yeah, Timothy Lowe, you're going to be better. But would he be better?
Okay, so,
I don't know.
So the couple factors on that is he'd have fresh legs, but he would also be so untested in a playoff moment. So it's like that kind of cancels it out to me. He's a kid that's been, he's probably ready to rumble. He's probably feeling like he'd be shot out of a cannon, but he has been now inserted into a game six must win scenario against a Tampa Bay team that would pick that kid apart. Okay, that's part one. So I don't know. Where do you put the advantage for that? Even.
And he faded down the stretch of the regular season himself.
He did. I just wonder the process that Sheldon Keefe takes now, and this can lead into Michael Bunting conversation too. He decided to stick with the same lineup that had been winning, and I was on board for that, right?
Yeah.
I was team, don't put Bunting in the lineup. Sure,
we were poorly. Both.
Yeah, looks poor when you lose. I don't think that Michael Bunting would have won the game for the Maple Leafs.
Again, big hindsight night.
Still. He wasn't in the lineup. He was a guy that could put the puck in the net. They ended up not putting the puck in the net. Draw your own conclusions. If you think that Michael Bunting was the reason the Maple Leafs lost the game, then you can stand on that hill. I don't know if I'm fully there, but sure. Now Sheldon Keefe has an opportunity to do something. He's got that card, right? He can play whatever card he wants.
And he's got full justification to play a card.
He can do really anything, but is he going to? Is he going to see Justin Hall and Mark Giordano as the detriment that we see watching this team? And is there a better solution? Is Gustafson and Liljegren going to come in and make positive steps ahead of what these two defensemen have done? I certainly can advocate for that case, but I can also see it being a very, very poor decision in hindsight. He's got to make some really tough decisions. So that starts with one, and then it's where do you put Michael Bunting in and who is coming out? Because he's got to get back in the lineup at this point, right?
Let's finish the D and then go to Bunting.
Yeah.
I think there's a chance that the defense corps is just not good enough.
Well, because I think you're right.
you just laid out the 7 and 8 guy. Do we want to see a Gustafson Liljegren pairing? Do we want to see? Liljegren Gio maybe. Can Gustafson help Hall? No. Like, as much as they run 8-9 deep now.
Hey, Victor Mete's probably
around. There's just
around.
A chance it's just not good enough. Victor Mete, I did see him in the press box, actually.
He's still there. I forgot that he existed. Like, they have some bodies, but none of them are good enough.
The defense corps might be good enough to beat the Lightning here. They have to win one of the next two games. But it's not a defense corps where you're able to really cover up for someone that's not performing well or an injury.
Oh, you're exposed.
Like, it is kind of hanging on by a thread. And Morgan Rielly elevating his game to the point that it has is, obviously, it's been a huge part of this, but it's essential.
It also is a glaring difference. I think it exposes even more of how poor other players are playing. When you're like, God, just get Morgan Rielly out there whenever you can, because I don't have faith in many other players back there.
They have a guy who's transformed once again into a number one defenseman and is playing unbelievably well in Morgan Rielly. They have Luke Shen, who's his running mate, who's valiant, but you can't give him too much. You just can't. He can't play 25 minutes along with Morgan Rielly. It's going to catch up to you. They've got an underperforming shutdown pair in TJ Brody and Jake McCabe. They were pretty good last night.
Yeah, they were better.
And they've got a third pairing that you'd want to hide and never put out on the ice.
But can it get worse?
But you have to. I think it can get worse. I don't know if it can get better.
I think it can get better. I think that Timothy Liljegren could be better than Justin Hall. Could be the operative word.
He could be better than Mark Giordano, too.
But yeah, I'm kind of, those two together. Anyway.
Right. I think just one of the realities is this. Maybe that, they did all this to improve it, and maybe it's just not good enough. Maybe it's just not good enough. Maybe Mark Giordano has no chance to survive the rigors of four straight series played like this.
But I think that Sheldon Keefe having to tell his guy, Giordano, who has been a big addition to this team,
took less money,
that you're not playing in the lineup, could be, it probably is the right decision.
It's the same. It's the Jason Spezza story all over again.
It's the hard
decision.
Like,
as much as we loved it so much, it's the Jason Spezza story all over again.
It's the
hard
decision.
Where it's like, can we, is this going to work?
But you know what?
Can you hold up?
Sheldon Keefe is coaching for his life right now. If they blow the series, bye-bye, Sheldon Keefe.
Of course.
So you need to make the hard decision. That might be taking your veteran hometown discount guy out of lineup if he's not good enough. I just don't know what kind of guts that Sheldon Keefe has after this game. And he's got an opportunity to reset today and watch the tape, but I don't think you're not going to see what we're seeing. And then you have to make a decision in time for tomorrow in Tampa. Are they skating today? I don't know. They're traveling. They might get a quick skate in. It's a big decision, and that also leads into the offensive decision where you have Michael Bunting is, I would say, 95% is going to slot back into this lineup.
I'd take the over on that.
Okay. Justin's fully confident. I still think there's a tiny percentage that Sheldon Keefe is stubborn enough to say that I did the right thing. My team just needs to perform better in a game six. If so, if we see Michael Bunting, who's coming out? Obviously, like, we need to stop saying, oh, obviously Nyes is not tied with Bunting. I thought Nyes played really well. Again. So, duh, he's not moving. But if he's in the top six now, where are you slotting Michael Bunting, A, and where are you taking somebody out of the lineup?
Well, it's probably not to the benefit of Sheldon Keefe at all, but in this weird scenario, that Callie Yarncroke played pretty awfully and hasn't been that good. And I know Austin Matthews likes playing with him. He also has liked playing with Michael Bunting.
He liked playing with
him. Yeah. I think it's almost obvious what needs to happen. I think Bunting has to play on the top line again. And then you're dropping Yarncroke down to a third line, probably, because you want to
keep Nyes on the second.
Because you're trying to prop up John Tavares with Mitch Marner. I mean, a complete blender. But if it's just as simple as, okay, how are you going to fit Michael Bunting back in? Yarncroke drops to the third line. Kerfoot's playing on the fourth line for Sam Lafferty.
Yeah, Sam Lafferty didn't do too much,
my guy's struggling. Your guy.
I think that's the right decision. I wonder if you go full blender or if you once again say, this is the winning lineup. They just need to perform better. I think that's the wrong
decision.
Here's
the thing, though. Like, it's so hard to say this is the winning lineup. One of my keys was Sheldon Keefe has got to, like, resist the urge to make changes. And now it's pretty obvious he has to make changes. Mm-hmm. And it was made mandatory that he makes changes once Michael Bunting got himself suspended. But when you think about it this way, Sheldon Keefe is trying to win a elimination playoff game against a team that has won two of the last three Stanley Cups and has been to the Stanley Cup final three straight times with a line that he had never once had on the ice together in the regular season. Like, the Nyes, Tavares, Marner unit, is there a single second of overlap with those three guys? Like, it's kind of like how much experimentation went down the stretch of the season for Sheldon Keefe. And it was like, hey, could we just, like, see what, you know, you're actually going to put out there? Do you want to get some continuity yourself? Do you want to have some proven concept? And then you're in this situation, again, because there are some circumstances that were unforeseen, but you're in a scenario where the Lightning, who just roll over the same lineup over and over and over again, you're putting out a line that is never, there's no semblance of, hey, I know where you're going to be, right? I know Matthew Nyes and John Tavares. And again, they went to a blender. It worked in game four when they were desperate. But, like, why would there be stronger continuity on the side of the Maple Leafs as opposed to the Lightning when you've got a lineup that's been together forever on one side and just kind of like, oh, this makes the most sense for tonight on the other side? And again, his hand's been forced a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the reasons why you would see a little bit more connectivity with one side and a little disjointedness on the part of the Maple Leafs.
So if you're Sheldon Keefe, how are you addressing the opportunity at hand? Because it still is another opportunity for the Maple Leafs. They might feel a little less tense tomorrow night, but I don't buy it.
Why would you feel that? I don't know how you could.
I don't think you can.
Like, imagine packing up the suit, last night?
You go home on the road.
Going home and you got to, like, quickly put together a bag to go back to Tampa after the 10th straight time you've done this?
And it's starting to become a trend.
Like, it's an ugly scene. Like, it's got to be uncomfortable and just, like, here we go again already. So, that was the consequence of losing game five. It's the mental aspect.
We've opened the door to the conversation that is this the same result that we're going to see once again. You have an opportunity on the road in game six to win and close this thing out, but you just had that and you didn't deliver a very inspired performance. So do you completely mess things up and change it up?
Do you go back to what you started with? Like, is it Nyes, Achari, O'Reilly, and you're just trying to find the right mix in the top six with Bunting added to it again?
This is where Sheldon Keefe is going to either win a legacy as a good coach, or he's going to be John Cooper's.
Or I'm going to be talking about, especially because I said at the start, like, I'm going to be talking about how you just could not trust anything that you had. That you had 82 games to put things together, and in the end, you just scrambled, and you were way too restless, anxious, and you let the moment overcome you.
Yeah.
And again, it's not going to be fair, and hindsight's going to be the biggest factor in all this.
Right.
It's not going to be fair, but Sheldon Keefe could pull himself either together or take himself completely out of this if he just does too much.
And to be honest, I don't know what the right answer is.
Yep.
And I'm glad I don't have to make the decision. But there needs to be some decisions made. That's where I'll stand. There needs to be some decisions made. You can't roll into Saturday night with the same thing.
And I think for you, there needs to be consequences. There needs to be consequences for being on the ice for 14 goals in three games if you're Justin Hall.
Justin Hall
almost three a game.
He cannot be
three
in the lineup Saturday.
Three a game is wild.
I think that's a non-starter for me. Whatever you do with how you mess around the top six, the top three lines, that's going to be, it's either going to age great or it's going to look like a poor decision, and I don't know how to make that one. So,
would you ever consider Brody, Geo, McCabe, Hall, something like that?
No, I don't want to see
over Hall. Liljegren.
No.
Hall's done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I don't want to say this, but you do have a buffer. You have a game seven, and all bets are off at that point.
And the truth of the matter is, like, again, put it out there. I want them to trust what they have. I think that was the key to the series. However, you have to trust what you see as well. And the bottom line is, through five games, the Maple Leafs have been better once. Mm-hmm. They have three wins, but they have been the inferior team based on the run of play four out of five times.
And it kind of felt like that puck luck went away last night. Like, they had a lot of...
I mean, you could only live on it for so long.
Yeah, you had two games where you really... you got fortunate. The hockey gods were with you. We came in here and be like, how the hell did they pull that one out? But you know what? The momentum was on your side. The puck luck wasn't there last night. They had opportunities to close that game, to win that game, and it didn't happen. And it wasn't a devastating game one performance, but it wasn't to the level that you need to be able to find to close a game out. And they haven't found what that level is, what that perfect mix is, what that perfect chemistry is, how to lead in those moments. I keep like, can we get Ryan O'Reilly to get it? How many moments can we have Ryan? I'm just like looking at Ryan O'Reilly to lead this team over the hump, right? It's not fair for him. He just joined this team, and it's like all bets are on Ryan O'Reilly to be the leader, to be the guy that knows how to make this chemistry work, how to put the puzzle pieces together. It's like, yeah, I know he's a Conn Smythe winner and a Stanley Cup champ, but you got enough veteran experience on that team that you've got to find a way to rewrite this script.
Don't you see a little lightning in him?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
In the sense that he performs in big moments, or
what I was talking about off the top with, okay, we're gonna you're really going to have to earn a goal tonight. Mm. When Ryan O'Reilly's out there, Lightning have to earn it,
He just works so hard.
And that variability is with every other part of the Leafs lineup where you're never quite knowing if it's going to be boom or bust.
Yeah.
With O'Reilly, you can kind of expect the same thing over and over again. And with the Lightning last night, to a man, shift after shift, you could expect that same thing over and over and over again. And that's the difference in the game. Continuity and a little bit of boom or bust. And it was bust. And it's been bust four to five times, and they're up despite that. But when it is five games of sample, and clearly things aren't working, Justin Hall being the top of the list, yeah, it's probably time for change.
All right, we got a full day breaking this down. Kipper's going to join us at 7. Sam McKee and Brent Gunning are going to come in studio at 8 a.m. The Vibes, the fellas, and of course, we teed it up all week. We'll take your calls at 7:30. We wanted it to be a feel-good Friday hotline. Might not be, but maybe you have some positive words of affirmation, some thoughts and feelings going into game six tomorrow night in Tampa. We'll take your calls at 7:30 so you can get in the queue a little early. We can hear from you, get through as many as we can. Are you on the same wavelength as Justin and I with Justin Hall, where you want to put Michael Bunting? We can take all your thoughts and feelings. Also, at 590-590, we're reading your texts. There's lots in the text line already. People are fired up this morning, so I'll get to that. Throughout the show, we'll take a break. We'll do the A-list, and then we'll talk to Kipper.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing. All right, we're taking your texts at 590-590. We'll sprinkle those in throughout the show. We'll take your calls at 7:30. We've got lots of thoughts and feelings and vibes in the text line. We'll get to that throughout the day. Kipper also dropped a spicy article on the Toronto Star, potentially about Kyle Dubas and his pending contract. We will talk about that. But for the A-list, I wanted to highlight something that is sad with our society. We can never have fun things. You know the big hats? The big oversized hats that became kind of viral? I think it was Brian Robinson that wore one.
Didn't you fire one of those on yesterday?
Weirdly enough, I did. And this story, weirdly enough, came across my timeline. But the giant hats, it was, oh yeah, Commanders running back Brian Robinson wore one, started it out. Remember, it was like this massive... Mm. Oh my God, that thing's hilarious.
It's a big hat.
So then people started, I don't know, the company that makes them, whatever. The Devils were wearing them. New Jersey Devils were wearing them. Big win by them last night, by the way. And then everybody started getting in on the fun. And the Braves this year have used that as their big home run celebration, the big giant hat. Also, every single team in the MLB decided to go all in on home run celebrations this year. You've got the funnel. You've got the samurai sword. You've got a trident. Like, there's so many cool things. Blue Jays, I feel like, are the only team that said, we'll do none
Serious ball club.
Like, legitimately ripped apart all of their fun and games and their serious Sally, and every other MLB team is like, we're going to lean into it. Nonetheless,
they do have, like, Joey Chestnut hanging out on Tuesday, smashing Looney Dog records, so.
That's not part of it. But the Braves have their big home run hat celebration, and unfortunately, New Era, who is the official hat of the MLB, the on-field cap of the MLB, won't let them wear it anymore because it's a threat to their, I don't know, contract that they're the only hat company in the world. So the Braves are not allowed to wear their big hat anymore, and we can't have fun things because of so.
Yeah, I would call that predictably lame because of course.
Well, then New Era should just start making them.
Yeah, they should. Of course, the hat manufacturer that's not getting their hat worn in key moments is a little upset, but it is lame.
Ooh.
It's lame.
And it makes this story even more interesting because yesterday at the game, somehow I came across one of the big hats. The Leafs are now selling them at Real Sports, the big, big old Leaf hats. And I got to try one on yesterday. I have a photo of it. And then the story came up. How much, and I already asked you this question, but they're selling this hat for...
I would have sold it. You don't trust my acting skills?
No. Oh, I'll just repeat what I said to you in the press.
Start
box.
Again.
Okay, Justin. How much do you think that big hat costs at Real Sports to buy the Maple Leafs big hat?
$100?
$150 for a big hat, a big novelty item that you probably can't wear anywhere but, I don't know, Maple Leaf Square and a game. But if you're sitting behind some guy in that hat,
and you shouldn't be wearing it at the rink if you have any like compassion or decency for the people behind you.
People were wearing them last night, and I thought, what if there's like a little boy behind you, first ever NHL game, you can't see the game because you got this giant dome.
Then again, like you can't fit that hat under a seat. You can't do anything with that hat once you have
it. $150 for the hat.
That's an expensive hat.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. We got Kipper on the other side. He's got a big head full of knowledge for us this morning. He wrote another story on his iPhone. Can't wait to decipher that.
Yeah.
Lots of Kipper talk coming up. We got Kipper, then we got your calls at 7:30 at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or star 590 on Roger's cell phone. You can get in the queue a little early. 7:30, we'll take your calls. unpacking last night's loss, another step towards a scary season. Game six, and then hopefully that's it, but there could be a spooky season. And then Sam McKee and Brent Gunning are going to join us in studio at 8 a.m. It's all next on The Fan Morning Show.